This week on Art in the Air features the founder and CEO of the Beatles tribute band, the Classical Mystery Tour, Jim Owen, that specializes performing with symphony orchestras. Next, Indiana artisan Ken Ravers, a nature, architecture, and landscape photographer with over 50 years of experience. Our spotlights on Canterbury Theatre's musical review, Starting Here, Starting Now, running July 3rd through the 13th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Dunes Arts Foundation for their summer theater. And we have, of course, the artistic director, Steve Scott, Elise Cremani, who's the managing director, and then one of the actors, Maxi Tung, he's there to tell us about the shows he's in. All of you, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight to tell us about what you got coming up next.
Yeah, nice seeing everybody.
Hi.
Well, Scott, we'll first punt it to you and talk about the first one coming up. And that's the, well, you've already done several shows, but the Bridges of Madison Comedy, which is your next one. And that's done as a musical, which is kind of a different take. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, of course, Bridges of Madison County is a very, very famous novel. And it became a film version with Meryl Streep. And then a number of years ago, it was turned into a musical for Broadway. And I think the musical version is the most successful. It's a terribly romantic story about a woman, an Iowa farm woman who has emigrated from Italy early in her life, who is having a perfectly fine life, but then run into a National Geographic photographer played by Max. And they begin a very intense, literally two-day relationship. So it's all about love and romance and what you might be missing from your life that you don't even know, and what choices you might have late in life that you should take or maybe not take. It's a beautiful story. The music is gorgeous. My main problem directing it is that I cry after every song. So the cast basically thinks I'm a sop, but I am. So, but it's a lovely story, and I think audiences will love it.
Is there any songs that are noteworthy from it? You know, a lot of the Broadway shows may not be, you know, they're kind of limited, but is there anything that you, that
there,
people
there
recognize?
Are no standards from the show. I mean, there are no songs that have become famous through other artists recording. And a lot of it is kind of recitative. I mean, there are some beautiful songs.
But well, One Second in a Million Miles. That's a pretty
One
good
Second
one.
In a Million Miles, yeah. And Another Life are probably the two best known songs.
Sure. Right. So, Max, tell us the challenges of doing that, being a photographer in rural Iowa. And just so you know, I actually shot all the bridges in Madison County a long time ago. So by accident, we were there staying for something and discovered we were a county away. And so anyway, I've been the photographer there, but not in the romantic thing. So,
amazing. I would love to see that work. I think the greatest challenge in this role is just the depth. The music is some of the most challenging written for a voice, the high end, the low end, just the gravitas that you got to bring to it. I think that is probably the greatest challenge. And of course, building a stable relationship, trusting relationship with my other actors on stage. I know it's a very vulnerable show. But I trust Steve, obviously, and I trust our music director, Andrew Flash. I'm so happy to be working with them again. This will be, what, show number 5?
Yes.
I think. Yeah, crazy. Yes. But every time we've taken steps forward in our trust and our belief in each other. And I think the shows really speak for themselves.
Well, yeah, it's really unusual because you have an intimacy, you know, guide on it as well. So it is a very vulnerable show.
Yeah. And that's important for this one because it is, it's physically intimate to a point, but it's emotionally very intimate. And that's, and the intimacy coach helps with both of those things.
So after Bridges, we now move on to the 4th annual Dunes Broadway Cabaret titled this year, Romantic Journeys. So tell us about what's on tee for that.
Well, Romantic Journeys is kind of the theme of our entire season. And I think the cabaret is kind of the capstone of that. And it's going to include a number of actors from this season and several actors from past seasons. As we've done in the past, just bringing some great songs, both known and unknown, from the Broadway stage to life for our audiences. I think the most we're doing it at our home base for several nights, and then we're taking it to Three Oaks to do at the Acorn Theater for a day. So it's kind of the first time we're going on tour, albeit not a long tour. But it's nice to kind of get out there and spread our wealth to other places in our area.
So, Max, are you part of the cabaret?
I am, yes. I'm very excited. I still haven't picked my romantic songs just yet, but I'm hoping to have those picked out very soon.
So we haven't actually assembled a cabaret yet. You are doing that. You're in process.
We do it kind of as we're building the cabaret in rehearsal, which we'll be doing very soon. But all the singers we've got have a lot of songs in their repertoire, and so we kind of pick and choose what are the best.
Well, at least we're going to come back to you in our last about minute and a half here to give us all the details of these two shows, how they can find out information about it and everything like that.
Sure. So I also want to mention most likely we're going to start having food at our shows so people can order about an hour before the show. And that's a new thing for us. But you can get your tickets and meals at dunesarts.org/tickets. dunesarts.org.
So what's on the menu?
Well, we haven't made the menu for Bridges yet, but it may be Mexican. Maybe Mexican food, American.
I'm voting for Mexican.
Okay. Sounds good. I just want to say that if you saw Tick, Tick, Boom last year, Max was the lead. So if you love that, you're going to love the shows this year.
Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's dunesarts.org. You find out information there. Contact at dunesart.org. And the phone number is 219-879-7509. Located on 288 Shady Oak Drive in Michigan City. And they're going to be Bridges of Madison County, the musical. They'll open July 26th. And the 4th annual cabaret, August 15th. All of you, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
And a Spotlight Extra, the Chesterton Arts Center presents Beneath the Surface, featuring the works of John Hook and Andrea Peterson, running July 5th through September 1st with an artist talk and reception Friday, July 19th at 4 p.m. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
This is Karen Maravilla with It's Just Serendipity, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Jim Owen to Art on the Air. Jim started his musical education at an early age. At home, his father played music classics for him on the piano and from the family's extensive recordings of the greats. He began studying piano at six and by his teenage years was garnering awards. He was 8 years old when he first heard the Beatles and was inspired to start guitar lessons. His first professional performances as a Beatle was at 16. Then at 18, he began touring internationally with various productions of Beatlemania. In 1996, Jim began working on his idea for a new show with orchestra. Classical Mystery Tour is the result. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jim. It's very nice meeting you.
Wow, great to be here. Thank you.
Well, Jim, we always like our audience to know about our guests, kind of their background story, you know, their origin story. I always like to see how you got from where you were to where you're now. So kind of fill out where Esther's intro and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, that's a long story, but...
we like long stories.
We have the time for it.
I think just music is such an incredible part of our lives. And so at very early age, I was really into piano because I heard a lot of piano music, orchestral, classical music. And even at 6 years old, I really felt like I either wanted to be a concert pianist or a composer or something like that. And I really hadn't been exposed to popular rock music at that point yet. And as you said, about a year or two later, 7 or 8 years old, I heard the Beatles for the first time. My dad's sister, my aunt, came out from New York to take care of the kids in California. We were growing up in Huntington Beach, California. And she started to play her record collection. And we got to hear some stuff by the Everly Brothers, which was really neat. I remember hearing Bird Dog. I thought that was a really cool chord progression in there. Some Chubby Checker stuff. I forget what else. But then she put on Meet the Beatles. But this is in the 70s. So the Beatles had already had their time and they'd broken up and everything. So right around 1972 or 73, I'm hearing Meet the Beatles, their original Capitol album from 1964. I heard it for the first time. And of course, I pretty much like, you know, anybody who heard the Beatles said, wow, what, these guys sound incredible. And I was instantly hooked.
Was there a particular song that grabbed you?
I can't really think of it. Probably, you know, the first two tracks were I Want to Hold Your Hand and I Saw Her Standing There. And then it just went on from there. All My Loving, All I've Got to Do, all the songs on that record had this really particular quality. And I think it's really difficult to capture on a recording energy. I think, you know, for studio musicians, it must be really difficult to be in a closed studio and try to muster up the kind of energy you get when you're doing a live show. But that album, Meet the Beatles, had energy all over it, and it just really captured me.
Yeah, it's bouncy.
And that's what inspired you to start taking up, like, guitar? Well, yeah, I guess you were already doing piano, but also start taking up guitar at that point?
Yeah, so I've been asked over and over, you know, don't you do your own music or write your own songs or things like that, which I would have loved to do. And I certainly tried to do that, but I didn't really have a talent for creating new music. I think my talent really lies in playing other people's music well. And, so, you know, starting off taking piano lessons, that's the whole point, is to play classical music pretty much the way the composer intended. And so it was no leap for me to think, well, I could play Beatles music just the way they did it, but of course I'd need a band to play with. So I started learning guitar. At 8 years old, I didn't really think much about singing. I really just wanted to learn guitar. So I was way into George Harrison's guitar style and learning lead guitar. And I did most of that by ear.
And that's sometimes the best way to play music. I mean, long before there was musical notation and things like that, that's how people created music in that way. So here you are, you've gone 8 years old, heard your first album, and then you kind of, over the next few years, developed to a point that at age 16, you're doing your first performance as a Beatles. So tell us about that process.
Yeah, and that first band.
Yeah, well, it's really fun to be in school and meet people at school who you find have similar interests. And the funny thing is, in the 70s, a lot of the guys that I would meet wanted to play other kinds of music, like Led Zeppelin and things like that. But I met who became a really close friend of mine. He was also crazy about the Beatles, and he was way into the drums. So that was the first kernel of a band. I played lead guitar. He played the drums. We were 11 years old. The other two guys played bass and rhythm, and they kept bugging us to do other stuff like Led Zeppelin. And we're like, no, we just want to play Beatles music. And right around that time, this Broadway show came out called Beatlemania. And of course, that played in New York, but it came to LA, I think, in 1978. And we could not wait to go see this show. And when I saw it, I'm like, that's exactly what I've been wanting to do, because you know, the Beatles had broken up in 1970, and all throughout the 70s was always in the news. Who's going to get the Beatles back together? What multi-million dollar offer can get the Beatles to play one last concert? Of course, never happened. And there was a lot of people like myself who never got a chance to see a Beatles concert. And I think Beatlemania, that Broadway show, was really fun in the way that it brought four guys together on stage who, by, you know, costuming and, of course, their musical talents, their ability to sing and play as if you were watching a Beatle concert. And so I saw that in 1978. So that's exactly what I've been wanting to do.
How do you do it? I mean, at 18 to start touring, how does that connection take place?
Yeah. So, in Huntington Beach and kind of around our local area, we tried to play some little shows, whatever we could do, just for the love and joy of playing Beatles music. There was kind of this thing, it's actually still something that happens, called Fest for Beatles Fans. And at the time, it was known as Beatlefest. They had to change the name, I guess, just due to the name Beatle being too prominent in Beatlefest. So it became Fest for Beatles Fans. But we went to that in the early 80s, and there was a battle of the bands, and, you know, just musicians got to know each other. And eventually, I connected with some of the guys that were doing that Broadway show, Beatlemania. And when it came to, that show Beatlemania actually had to stop at some point. I think there was a legal battle. But they continued to play, you know, members of Broadway Beatlemania. And when they needed a guitarist, and they knew me, so I got called to start playing some fill-in shows with these guys. And it was really amazing for me, because I got to travel around and, you know, really do it professionally. And that's how I got my professional chops. And over the years of doing that, you know, a lot of Beatles music features orchestral instruments, and, you know, they didn't have orchestral players. They just would maybe hire a keyboard player to kind of mimic that on a keyboard. Some of the groups used backing tracks where they would have synthesizers playing the orchestra parts, backing it. But it was the 90s. So it took a long while for me to finally put this together. In the early 90s, I met a saxophone player. And I said, would you fill in for us sometime when we play Lady Madonna and play the sax solo? And he never would. But then I got really determined to do live with live orchestral musicians. And I thought, yeah, I'll get a saxophone player. And then it wouldn't be that hard to get a string quartet. We could do Yesterday with a string quartet. And then immediately it just clicked into, no, it's got to be a whole orchestra. And we need to recreate all those incredible George Martin orchestral parts that he did on the original Beatle recordings. And it took about a year for to put this together, and Classical Mystery Tour premiered in 1996.
Well, it was such an inspired idea that you had. I think I read that you tried to get the scores, you know, from the UK, but that proved impossible. So you found somebody who listened and charted everything for you. I mean, what a mighty, huge operation.
Yeah, he was amazing. I was taking some classes just for fun and enrichment, let's say, at Cal State Long Beach in Long Beach, California. So I went to the music office and I said, I've got this idea and I need somebody who can create orchestral charts. And the person at the reception desk there said, oh, you got to talk to Dr. Herman. So I made an appointment to meet Martin Herman. He was a professor there, composer, conductor, arranger. And when I told him my idea, he actually didn't take me seriously and was thinking, why would anybody want to go see a show like that? You can just listen to the original Beatles at home. And then, but when he finally realized that I wanted to do this and I was serious, and it turns out he was a Beatles fan too and could not wait to get started transcribing by ear Strawberry Fields Forever and She's Leaving Home and some of his favorites, which were ones that obviously we were going to do in the show. So it was really amazing that I met him, and he was just perfect for the task.
Now, early in the Beatles' career, they actually, I think they did a thing called three-track, multi-track recording. They were kind of like innovative in that early multi-track recording biz. And so that kind of really developed, they were really into the technology of what they could do as well as the musicianship. So you're getting the orchestrations together. Early band members, how did you find people that wanted to do this through your contacts to start forming the core of your Classical Mystery Tour?
Well, because Classical Mystery Tour actually is more importantly about recreating the music as well as possible and in, you know, to the highest really artistic way. You know, you couldn't really rely on theatrics to cover over for that. So costuming, great. Beatles impersonation, you know, doing the mannerisms, great too. But I wanted to get the guys that I knew could sing the best, could play the best. And so I tapped into, again, my group of people that I knew who had been doing the Broadway Beatlemania. And I called the ones that I thought would be best. And as luck would have it, they thought this was a really great idea and said, yeah, I'll try that out with you. And it was kind of a dream group, you know. So the first show was really amazing.
Good, because you want the believability to be up. So, Jim, from the outset, did you envision working with local orchestras? And then like a follow-up to that would be, do you have your still please please, you know, list of orchestras you would like to work with?
Oh yeah, well, of course, you know, the first show was just, I want to do this and I'm young and I don't know any better, and you know, I won't take no for an answer. So I just really wanted to do at least one show. But of course, in the back of my mind is, well, if it works out, then we could play with other orchestras around the country or even around the world. And it took a while to catch on. I think the next year, 1997, we played with the Louisville Orchestra and the Buffalo Philharmonic, and that was it for the next year. And slowly but surely, word got out that this was a really great show. It used the orchestra members effectively, and it really appealed to audiences. So we became pretty popular as a guest artist with orchestras around the country. And yeah, there are a few we still haven't played with. If I think of all the places we've been and the few that we haven't, for example, we never played in Miami, never played in Minneapolis. And of course, my dream job that probably never will happen is I would love to play at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it should happen. It's a natural, but I think... they probably more or less do original artists, not tribute, you know, so.
But you've taken the tribute idea to a whole different level, and it's different than, like, I know with my days working, doing theater management and theater things, we had several, like American English was one and several other Beatle tributes. But this takes it to a whole different level. And of course, I got to experience it firsthand. That's where I met you for the LaPorte County Symphony. You were there. You were not performing that night, though. You were out in the audience with watching that. So you tell us about the cadre of people that you have available to now do the Classical Mystery Tour, because obviously you didn't do that night.
Yeah, so the night we played, or the show played, LaPorte County Symphony, the night before that, I was in Houston with the Houston Symphony. And it was really important that the band be able to attend Friday night's rehearsal with the LaPorte County Symphony. That's when the rehearsal was, and I couldn't make it. So I hired somebody else to play the John Lennon role, which is the role I play. And I wanted to see him because I know him and I've seen him do a regular Beatles tribute, but I hadn't seen him do our show. And, you know, if anything ever happens to me, it'd be good to know that there's somebody, you know, really high quality that can sing well, play well, and, you know, so I wanted to see him and I was really happy. His name was Jim Irizarry and he played with our core group, which was Tony Kishman. And Tony Kishman played the first show as Paul McCartney with us back in 1996. He's a guy that even out of costume, when we go around the airport, people are pointing at him thinking he's actually Paul McCartney. He looks so much like Paul McCartney, which is great that he looks like Paul McCartney. But the main thing is his vocal ability. He has such a Paul McCartney vocal, and to hear him sing live, it's really unbelievable. And I could go on. But the other group members, Tom Teeley was playing George Harrison that night, and Tom's from New York. He was in the original, one of the original Broadway members. And Chris Camilleri, our drummer from Long Island, New York, he's such a musical drummer, and he just has a great voice. And so anyway, yeah, it was really fun to see the show. I've only actually gotten to see it about three times over the years.
How did you get in touch with LaPorte County Symphony?
I forget how that happened, but, you know, we have an agent. It's an agency in New York that books us. And, of course, he's in contact with all the orchestras across the country. And I'm not sure exactly how that happened.
Right.
How does the show evolve, Jim, or does it, to keep it interesting and fresh for all of you?
We have more songs charted than we can do in any given night. And we actually have the ability to do different types of shows. If the orchestra or their marketing team wants to feature something, like, say they want to have a segment of more songs from Sgt. Pepper's album. And of course, so then one half we can kind of focus on Sgt. Pepper. The other half can be just greatest hits like usual. If there's an anniversary, a Beatles anniversary of some sort, we could do a wide album thing. And so it's just ever changing. And even if it were the same set list every night, the songs are so unbelievable. And the connection with the audience is so incredible. It's just, it never gets old and actually just seems to get better over the years.
Oh, that's nice. Do you stay in character when you sign autographs at the end of a performance?
Yeah. We like to go out in the costume afterwards. You know, I don't know if we actually stay in character, but we look in character.
You lose the accent, though.
Yeah. The show has some scripts and some jokes and things. We try to do our best Liverpool accents for that.
What do you do for pleasure on your off time? Like, do you do open mics at all, or?
No, it's actually quite a busy life, you know, just keeping a show like this going and preparing for upcoming shows and having a family. All of us are family men, you know, so we don't really get a chance to do much fun stuff like that.
Is there any project you'd like to do outside? And of course, you just said how busy you are, but is there any project that you are doing or want to do aside from the Beatles? Like you said, okay, I've really done this. I've got this nailed down. You know, I can do that and, you know, keep it fresh.
There's like a lot of John's in the wings.
But yeah, is there something else that's saying, well, this is another project that I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And that would be getting back into classical music. I've got a fantastic piano here in my living room, and I hardly ever get to play it. And I keep telling myself I just want to learn some chamber music, something on piano, get together with some local musicians. One of my dreams actually is to play this violin piano sonata by César Franck. It's just unbelievable. And I've got a violinist willing to do it with me, but I still don't have the time to get back into that. But yeah, that's my dream.
So, Jim, other things that you, what do you do for fun that's not music? I mean, I realize the music, it may be fun, and you have the unique privilege of doing something you enjoy that. But, you know, what does Jim do that's away from Classical Mystery Tour?
A travel has to be one of life's great things to do, honestly, to see new places, especially foreign countries, different cultures. Being out in nature, it's just so enriching to a life.
And when you take the show, and I've seen, you know, in your information, you've taken it overseas. How's the reception there to Beatles music? It tends to be universal, but, you know, some of the places you've taken, what's been the reaction?
Universally, just wherever you go, people are so familiar with Beatles music, Beatles songs, and I feel like the message in Beatles music touches people in much the same way. And so when you do that live in concert and add the element of the full symphony orchestra behind, I really can't explain what a fantastic, and I've just been told by people, you know, what it is like for them being in the audience. And that's just really what keeps us going. And it's the same, yeah, anywhere we've played in the world, be it Europe, Australia, Asia, South Africa, the list goes on. Thankfully, we've been able to do this all over the place, and it's just been great.
Los Angeles Philharmonic, got to add that to the list.
Yeah. I know I read that you started out as George. Have you ever, since you started playing John Lennon, have you ever had to switch back, or have any of you had to switch roles?
No, I haven't had to. There's so much talent. I haven't had to, but that was quite a transition because everybody who knew me as a young man said, "How can you play any other character except George? You are George." I was so into it, and I really, really honed my performance and my vocals. And George Harrison's song "Something," I would consider that was my signature song, and I just I really loved it. But I find that I'm a better suit for the John Lennon character in the end, and I really enjoy singing more. So the transition was a tough one for a lot of people to accept, including me, but it turned out the best. And
it would be hard to give up "While My Guitar Gently Weeps." That's an exquisitely beautiful song.
Yeah, but then when I saw Tom Tealy do it, or somebody else like Joe Bithorn, I mean, and now those guys, wow.
Have you ever met any of the Beatles that are still around?
No, I wish I had, and I always wanted to meet their producer, George Martin. I never have. I met a one-time early Beatle, Pete Best. He was a really nice guy. He was their original drummer before Ringo came in. I met some people who were very close to the Beatles, like John Lennon's first wife, Cynthia. She was very complimentary and said, "How do you sound so much like John?" And I couldn't believe she spoke those words to me. It meant the world.
Well, unfortunately, Jim, we have to wrap it up here. I want to give you a chance to put your website out there and any future concert dates that you got coming up. And some orchestra out there wants to book you. Let us know about how they could do that.
The website is classicalmysterytour.com, and the dates page is constantly being updated. I think the next show will be San Francisco on July 18th.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art on the Air. That's Jim Owen, who is the creator, founder, and now the John Lennon character in the Classical Mystery Tour. And we, of course, had them at the LaPorte County Symphony. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your arts and music journey.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kenny White, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Ken Rabbers to Art on the Air. With a career of over 39 years in civil engineering, Ken began a photographic hobby in the early 1970s that blossomed into Ken Rabbers photographic art around 15 years ago. His photo work is primarily nature and landscape, with forays photographing architectural and motorsports subjects. He is also an Indiana artisan. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Ken. It's very nice meeting you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, Ken, it was a pleasure to meet you at the Indian Artisan event down there in Indianapolis when I popped in there, and that's where we first connected. But our audience always wants to kind of know about our guests. I call it their origin story. So tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Well, I grew up in Illinois in the Chicago suburb of Glen Ellyn. Spent the first 27 years of my life there. And active primarily in sports at a younger age. My first memory using a camera was when I was about 8 or 9 years old. I was on a trip with the Indian guides with my dad and older brother and at Lincoln's New Salem in Illinois, and had my camera with me and just kind of enjoyed wandering around trying to compose good pictures, or what I thought were good pictures at the time. Enjoyed that, but really didn't give that much thought as far as something to pursue as a vocation or a hobby or anything like that. Just all my friends were into sports and playing baseball, so that was really my focus growing up. Didn't really get a real camera, a single lens reflex, until early 1970s, and just kind of went from there. Always liked photography, but never really had the inclination to really make a purchase and get started until that time, and just kept on going.
So what captured you to do those? I mean, what were those first images? Were they landscape? Were they people?
They were more people and just focusing on where we were. And I was trying to, as I recall, trying to take pictures that would tell something, either a story or have something to talk about, not just snapshots. But other than that, I really didn't get into, an appreciation for landscape photography until probably late in high school. Just I've always appreciated it. I grew up camping and hiking with my parents, and always had an appreciation for nature and the outdoors. So it just kind of, that's always stuck with me.
So, Ken, were there any other family members interested in the arts?
My grandmother, on my mother's side, she did a lot of painting that no one really knew about until she passed away.
Oh, wow.
And but it was something that she did quite a bit. My father's father, my grandfather on his side, was a photographer. Just as a hobby, but he was somewhat of an influence as far as showing me certain things about photography and cameras and light and things of that nature.
So we have a lot of photographers who do listen to the show. What was that first camera? And then maybe tell us a little bit about that.
I wish I could remember what it was. It was a pretty inexpensive SLR. It may have been a Pentax. It had screw-on adapters for telephoto and macro, and it did great. It was a great camera to get me started, and after I had that for a very short time, I knew I wanted something a little bit better and something that would give me some more options as far as lenses and things of that nature.
Yeah, the K1000 was a starting place for a lot of them.
So what did you segue into after that Pentax?
A Canon FTB, which is at the time, I think their number two camera, just below the F1. And I was afraid that I was biting off more than I can chew, but it ended up being a fantastic camera. And I had that for many, many years and got a lot of great images using that camera. Really enjoyed it. And I still use Canon equipment.
What's your current Canon?
I have a Canon R1, okay. Which is one of their first mirrorless cameras. And that I ended up purchasing after my 6D took a kind of a crash and burn in a parking lot in Arizona. So the tripod collapsed and the lens fell, the camera fell, and luckily I had insurance.
Oh, that's good.
So I was able to, and the insurance agent encouraged me to upgrade my camera at the time, take advantage of that. I did.
How do you like mirrorless compared to a DSLR?
But the main thing that I like about it, a couple of things, but I like the fact that I don't have to worry about locking up the mirror if I'm taking time-lapse photos. I like the fact that I can look in the viewfinder and kind of have a built-in distance meter, which really helps. Other than that, not a whole lot of difference. And still, you know, the functions are all the same. There's a few more things that I can customize with the mirrorless, but that's just more due to the electronics and the actual functionality of it.
Did you have any of your old lenses using adapters to the R? Did you use that or?
Yes, I did, because I had some really nice lenses, and eventually through the years I've sold off some of those and replaced them with mirrorless lenses.
Yeah. I was wondering in that transition, how do the adapters work? Being a Canon shooter myself, and I probably will stay with a DSLR probably the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But, and again, the investment in lenses, and everybody's, oh, you get the adapter. But how was that adapter? How did it work? Did you lose any clarity or sharpness?
No, the adapter worked great. All it is a spacer that gets the lens away from the sensor back to where it should be, or where it would be if it was on a regular DSLR. So all the electronics go through, and you know, it was very seamless.
Good. Well, you may encourage me to do that, but I have four bodies that I actively use, two 5D Mark IIs, Mark IV, and then I have a 5D SR that I use for landscape and wildlife photography. So
yeah, that'd be a lot to replace.
Yeah, I agree. So tell us about your getting into photography. You a little bit about your career as a civil engineer. You did that. Did you use photography at any point during that career? And then, you know, what do you kind of find and pull the trigger that you kind of move from like the hobby status to professional status?
Well, I did use my camera a lot in the job. And whoever I was working with at the time knew of my hobby. And I always got encouraged, or it was more of please do this, and really encouraging, but going out and taking site photos and project photos and things like that, which I enjoyed. But you know, I would still take my camera with me on vacations, and anytime I had some from free time or was out hiking, I would have my camera with me and take advantage of that. But really didn't get into a real serious hobby until I retired from my job full time and really had the time to jump into it and do a lot of the things and learn a lot of the things that I had been putting off through the years with, you know, family priorities and things of that nature. My daughter was really the focus of my entire life. Her mother died when she was 3 years old. So mm-hmm. at that point, I just, that was my full-time job from then on. So it took a lot of my effort, but still I would, when we were together and going on trips, I would have my camera with me, and, you know, she was fine with that. And she enjoyed the outdoors and still does to this day.
My daughter and I know when we did this California trip, but she got a camera that actually from my dad, who did photography, and we'd go shooting together. Of course, my wife and I do that still, but yeah, it was kind of a fun thing that we could share together, doing the photography and going out and looking at scenics. So describe your work. I've been on your website, and I know we both looked at it, and I kind of think you are a generalist photographer with your fine art photography. You have a wide range of subjects, very eclectic. So, but tell us what you are drawn to.
What really draws to the photography in the first place is landscapes, nature photos. The architectural elements, I've always enjoyed architecture, and especially if it's something unusual. Cars, automotive stuff, that's something that I remember from, I don't know, being 3 or 4 years old, always being fascinated with cars. So those kind of I get drawn into those occasionally, even though my primary subject matter is more landscapes and nature type things. I like the grand landscapes or scenic vistas and things like that, but also like more intimate locations where, you know, you just get drawn in, hopefully drawn into a location and drawn into a photo.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. You know, I read your about me, and it said that you don't add color to your photos, but they are enhanced. Is that true? Because you did put this, say that you want to duplicate what you saw as you were taking the photo. So how do you process, or what is your processing of your image? Because digital is like a whole different thing than, you know.
Yeah, I but this as drastic as I get is I occasionally will add a little bit of saturation, but very, very little. I go a little bit heavier than that on the vibrance, but how I get the colors to come out is more with the light, with changing the exposure and using masking so I can concentrate on portions of a photo to enhance, you know, certain areas to get the viewers to hopefully see what I want them to see, or, you know, get drawn into the same type of feeling that I felt when I clicked the shutter.
You know, I have sort of an odd question. So in your home, do you hang your own work? Is your work, are your photographs up in your house? And if they are, which of your categories do you favor the most?
I have quite a few in the house, primarily because my wife, if I were living here by myself, I probably wouldn't have as many. But they're all landscape oriented. We've got a series of three black and white images over our entertainment center, and that was her idea. She must have seen it somewhere and thought that that would look nice. So I thought, well, okay, I'll come up with some that hopefully she'll appreciate, and she liked that idea. So we've
That's
got those.
She's
and,
a fan.
A couple of, you know, some of my, what I think are my more favorite images in our entryway, and then some in the living room and kitchen, bedrooms, pretty much everywhere.
That's nice.
So is my home that way too. We have a lot of my wife's work up all over. And then I have the hallway leading to my studio. Behind me here is actually my, I guess you'd call it my headshot and small studio that I do portrait work and everything. But the long hallway leading to this, I have all the stuff that's not on an exhibit because, or I swap things out in the house. So I put things out like that, just like you. So it you live with your artwork. So back to the question of processing, what post-processing? Are you a Lightroom guy, Photoshop, and everything?
I use Lightroom and Photoshop together. I always start in Lightroom, and that's how I keep my catalog straight and everything organized. And I'll often move to Photoshop if I want to do more masking and work on certain portions of an image, and usually finish up in Photoshop also.
I assume you start in RAW. I mean, I would imagine that someone doing the quality work you are, you're not a JPEG shooter unless it's just for fun. Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, because when you were talking about, you know, adding saturation, if you take a RAW image and view it, and people, it looks very plain and flat and everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, but that's not how it's supposed to be. It requires processing
right.
and everything, so.
Yeah, I tried to explain that to a group of people that I meet with every couple of weeks, and let them know. I said, if you looked at RAW images, or if you downloaded your images and they looked like they do in RAW, you would probably throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the group, is it a photo club? A local photo club?
Yeah, it's just a very informal group of people. There's six or eight of us that get together and just talk photography. Our beginners and
that's nice. So it's like a mentoring as well.
Yeah.
So with your motorsports, do you do NASCAR as well? Did you like NASCAR as a child?
What led you to motor cars or motorsports?
I just always liked cars and racing, and I don't care what it is. You know, I'll watch it, and it's I don't know what the fascination is. There's no one else in my family that has any interest at all in cars, and certainly not motor racing.
I think it's the jumpsuits. So.
I think you're right about that. My wife and I kind of got into casually watching NASCAR because of the number 4 Morgan McClure Kodak car. I mean, and then we started following. I mean, let's cheer for the Kodak car. We really didn't follow. And we occasionally still watch it. We're not really motorheads per se. But it's interesting. I want to talk about the Indiana Artisan and the process to get in. And again, we have a lot of photographers who may be interested in becoming Indiana Artisans, but they have a whole wide variety of things that they do, you know, in the Indiana Artisans that are not just art, they're artisanal, like they have food and things like that. But tell us, for a photographer, what the process is for you and how in your application finally getting to it, and then the benefits.
Well, the process is the same pretty much for everyone, except for the artisans, food people, filling out an application. And it's important to really read the application and fill out those sections completely. It's not, the written material is very important, as is the art that you submit for review. I didn't really realize that the first time I applied, and I was not accepted on that first time, but I asked for, you know, the reasoning, and they were very good about, well, you need to do this a little bit more and this a little bit more. So I took that seriously, applied again the next year, and was accepted. So it meant a lot, taken seriously by people who weren't necessarily artists. A lot of the people on the review committee were people from the community, educators, business people, and artists as well. So it meant a lot to me. Now, being part of the organization, it seems to enhance my career, I think. I'm on the advisory council for the board of directors, representing the photographers. I'm also on the board of directors representing the advisory council. So I've taken it seriously. I work at the store a few days a month and, take advantage of different things that they have to offer, but definitely worthwhile and a great organization.
Right. I know that one of the missions they would like to do is get more artists from Northwest Indiana, which, because we have an artist rich community up here, to become Indiana artisans. And we've talked to her about that, bringing them into the fold down there. So that'd be important. Is there a subject that you want to shoot that you haven't yet done?
Oh, boy. lightning.
Oh, yeah. Need a Pluto trigger for that.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever happen, but that'd be a fun thing to be able to do. I've seen a lot of photographs of lightning, and I'm thinking, wow, that would be pretty cool.
I know we just had the appearance of the Aurora Borealis here recently.
Yeah, and I missed out on that.
Yeah, I didn't get out either, and even though I'm in the area, and then by the time I went out on the second day of it, it just wasn't there, so it was kind of disappointing and everything. So shooting lightning, yeah. Do you ever do any, now when I do this, I call them photo illustrations, and they are ones that I consider highly manipulated, where I may make it look like brush strokes or things like that. Do you ever do anything beyond just like your more traditional photography?
I do that, but I haven't done anything for pieces that I try to sell or exhibit. I do it because I want to know how to be able to do it. And I do a lot of things like that. I do change colors on things, but only so I know how to do it. But what I try to sell to people is what I call more realistic. And you know, we're not photojournalists, so we don't, you know, there's some flexibility there, and I get to produce what my mind tells me it saw.
That's great.
Not necessarily what other people saw.
Well, we need to wrap up here in just a moment, but we want to give you a chance to tell us anything you have upcoming in July or later, and your website and how people can find you.
Okay. My website is klr-photoart.com. I'm also on Facebook, and that would be Facebook/KLR Photo Art. The next show that I'm involved in will be the Indiana Artisan Fall Show. It'll be up in Fort Wayne the weekend before Thanksgiving. I've got a couple others that are in the works, but that's the only definite at this point. Applied for a couple other exhibits and whatnot, but haven't heard back, so I don't really want to talk about those.
Got it. Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air and sharing your photo journey and your entire life journey, Ken Rabbers, and you can find him at klr-photoart.com, and he's an Indiana artisan. Thank you so much for sharing your time on Art in the Air.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show